Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Same all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on Chuck Oliver Show. Well, there is a list that has been whittled by one. Do you know the list of teams that play what we used to call Division I, FBS college football? I think that there are maybe four programs or five programs that had never been on NCAA probation. They had never been sanctioned by the NCAA ever in their football history. I may get this wrong. It's not important enough to look up, but I think I'm going to get this right. Dan or David, someone who's enterprising, you may want to check this, but you don't have to. I think Northwestern, Boston College, and the service academies in football. And I had mentioned this when one of them came off the list. Whoever, maybe the list was bigger, or maybe BC got sanctioned or something happened. But it was about 5 years ago. It was the last. And this is the reason I remember looking at this about 5 years ago. The list had gotten paired, and someone, an associate off air, had asked, and I was like, I'll talk about this on air. Asked me off air, how can it be like out of 130 teams, it's these two or three randos and then all of the service academies? And I said, do you know how hard it is to cheat in recruiting at the service academies? And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, well, everybody at the school's on full scholarship. That's what you don't really like. They have unlimited scholarships at Navy. Like, every kid there is on full scholarship. And you get the best of everything. If you are a high school senior and you go to Grambling, or you go to Southern Miss, or you go to Ole Miss. Dan, would you agree? I'm going to drag Dan into this. Would you agree that those would be probably three different levels of, say, university, athletic department provided medical care and nutrition science, et cetera?
Yeah, like absolutely.
Wildly different.
Sure.
Air Force, Navy, Army. It's the best of everything. So you think about, you're begging to get into West Point. I'm going to give you a Lincoln Navigator to go there. Like, you see what I'm saying? It's different. And so I said, that's why you'll never see them placed on probation for recruiting violations. Air Force has Air Force football. Let me clarify, Air Force football. Placed on 2 years probation for recruiting violations. You know what they did? It was COVID-19 violations. It's going to be listed as recruiting violations because what Herm had going on down at Tempe was, hey, let's go in the stairwell. Give me a 40. That was nefarious and with intent. The NCAA said the Air Force Academy had four individuals involved in the alleged violations. Hosting high school prospects on campus during dead periods in 2020. Providing them with improper benefits at any other place. And I'm not going to alibi. I didn't go to Air Force. I couldn't have gone to Air Force. I'm not here to alibi for Air Force. I'm saying this is not the same as anybody else. They did break the rules. But the Committee on Infractions will not make a final ruling on a fifth individual's case right now. But the four previous, there were four individuals who did say, yeah, I did this, this, and this. And so Air Force is going to pay a fine. They're going to get – it's going to be like everybody else. They're going to have restrictions on visits and this and scholarships and a four-week ban on recruiting communications, evaluation days, blah, blah, blah. So if you see a headline and you think, well, I don't know if I've ever seen that, you haven't seen it before. Air Force is on probation. Now, I'll just go ahead and get to hold the scandal sheet off. Brett Favre, if you've seen, folks, I'll give you the boiled down version of this. My opinion here, because Brett Favre's attorney has insisting that, oh, no, my client didn't know where the funds were coming from. My opinion of this, Brett was looking for a cash cow that, among other uses of the funds, he really wanted to bankroll some stuff at Southern Miss, including volleyball. It's just bizarre, folks, except you think, well, he's a local kid. Where's his hometown? Like 5 minutes from campus? Kill, Mississippi? So, local kid, loves the university, et cetera, played there, you know, 25 years ago. We all know that. If you haven't seen the details about his pursuit of government funds, not intended to do things like pay promotional fees to sort of celebrities or fund a new volleyball center, not intended for any of that. And so, federal funds and state funds for Brett Favre, this is really, really, really bad. And I'm going to follow to see how his attorneys shape this as, oh no, Brett is not culpable. He didn't violate the law, or if he did, boy, was it unknowingly. I'm going to pay attention and I'm going to listen to what they say. I'm going to tell you, sitting here right now on a Friday, Brett Favre is going, my opinion is he's going to wind up on the pay no mind list. Is that an official list or is that just kind of an understood thing? Like, I can't hire him. I can't have him around. I don't think he's going to be, is he an investor in Copperfit? Because I think Jerry Rice is going to say, hey, can we put Kerry Collins on this now? Can we get someone besides my man Brett?
I was listening to Sirius XM NFL this morning. And there was still a Brett Favre Copperfit commercial.
Okay, so if he's part owner, I guess, and I don't know this. I'm just saying, that's how, if he's still the owner. Because like Jerry Richardson that owned the Panthers? Jerry Richardson, while he's still on the Panthers, he was like, yes, keep my statue out front. Well, yeah, but there's some controversy. Yeah, but it's a statue of me, and I own the team. Well, if you own the company, yes, you'll keep yourself as the celebrity endorser. Otherwise, like that Papa John guy, is it John Schnechter? Yeah, he had a board that was like, yeah, you're going to get on out of here. If it was still privately owned, like Chick-fil-A, ever so often something happens and you know what Chick-fil-A says? Because they're privately owned, they're like, yeah, it's just what we believe. When you have a board, it's different. So I don't know if Copperfit, I have no idea. But if you're Jerry Rice, this is where someone tells Jerry, what's the phrase, Dan? Distance yourself? Jerry, you should distance yourself.
Arm's length.
Let's go arm's length from Brett. Instead of appearing at the charity event, maybe just sign a football. Just send it along. So that's what's going on right now. You got my man Marcus Dupree involved. Have you seen that? Marcus Dupree, if you don't know Marcus came 2 years, I want to say, after Herschel Walker. And I was a middle schooler, so this goes way back. And I don't mean to – I don't want to talk about like Glenn Davis and Doc Blanchard here, okay? But Herschel wins the Heisman, and Marcus Dupree is a high school senior in Philadelphia, Mississippi. And so he's just he is the bee's knees. And so his story's on 30 for 30. You could see it. He's as great a high school running back probably as ever there was. So he got some of the celebrity endorsement funds, is my understanding. And so when you are writing headlines and getting people to click, well, it's a lot easier to get, oh, Marcus Dupree, high school football legend wrapped up with Favre mess. Ooh, I'm going to click it. Marcus Dupree's like, whoa, wait a minute. All I did was answer the phone. Hey, Marcus, you want to come appear and, you know, say XYZ, photo, sign an autograph? Marcus is like, sounds good to me. He's saying, what didn't happen is like, all right, this $500 or $250 or $10,000, whatever the appearance fee was, hey, let me tell you where we got it. There's these relief funds. And so it's supposed to go to really important stuff, but we're going to pay you. They didn't tell him that. So it looks bad headline-wise, and it is bad for Brett Favre. Marcus Dupree is insisting it's not bad for him. And then of an important, like, current on-field import, Cedric Tillman is maybe, like, whatever we saw last weekend in Knoxville, aren't we a bit more impressed that Tennessee did that without their best or number one receiver? I don't say best receiver. That may be Brew McCoy or Hyatt or whomever. But we're aware that, like, Cedric Tillman's all SEC, and he didn't play. He's undergone surgery is now the word. Y'all know what that tightrope surgery is? Where they – is it fishing line or wire or what? Do they just put it through there and yank it down and they – it's almost like, you know, when the boat comes in and you – tie it to the dock. So Cedric Tillman has undergone surgery on his left ankle. That was last week. And didn't play against Florida, of course, that is. And then they have a bye week. Josh Heupel has not commented on him making the return, only under the comment of, quote, we're a long way from game time. So it's the same thing that Tua had down at Alabama, actually twice. And there, it's an really interesting process. But and that's the only reason I know about it is because I remember watching a diagram of it, a video from when Tua had it done the first time. So that is what's going on with – this is the kind of thing – when you see a headline, Tennessee's number one receiver has ankle surgery. Okay, see you at the combine. And Josh Heupel's like, nah, he's cool. We may see him and hope to see him soon. And maybe they will. Off this week at LSU, then Bama, then UT Martin. I have no idea about the recovery of this, but I can promise you UT Martin is viewed as another bye week. And you're viewing Kentucky, Georgia, Missouri, South Carolina, Vandy in a different light as far as Cedric Tillman is. As far as like these games, LSU, Bama. You may be willing to take a pass on those if you think it makes it more likely you getting back for November. But, I mean, just think about the remarkable recovery there. Your number one receiver, ankle surgery at the end of September. Well, that he's done. No, maybe not. All right, we're going to take a break. Continue with the Chuck Oliver Show on Friday.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Rolling through hour two, Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday. Appreciate everybody coming here for your college football combo. So we are a month into the season. Florida State is 4-0. That's not nothing. Like I said, whoever you are, if you're 4-0, I can at least talk about you, and we can wonder, well, what if they played an even tougher schedule? Well, FSU's 4-0, and it's LSU in New Orleans and two conference opponents? I ain't apologizing for anything, especially one of those on the road on a Friday night in a charged environment against Malik Cunningham, who is he's like Manu Ginobili back there. I mean, he is just unbelievable. And so you're 4-0, so the record's better. But I want to go beyond that. I want to know, okay, well, specifically what on the team is better. And so I'm going to welcome on right now. Wake Forest is no prize, folks. So if they're 5-0, it's something. I want to welcome on right now a guy who knows all about the program from the Knollcast. He invented it. It is Ingram Smith. Ingram, how are you on this Friday?
I'm good, Chuck. Always happy to be able to join you. And, yes, it's quite the difference start of the season between this year and last for Florida State.
Yeah, so like I said, it's a better record. In fact, it's 4-0. It's the best record they've had since 2015 after four games. But pick, like drill down, give me one or two pieces of this team that in particular, Chuck, they're 4-0. The record's better because of this one or two units. They're way better and it's clear.
Well, the wide receivers are night and day. That's where the conversation would start. You went out and ironically enough, probably the kid that you thought would be the most productive. I'm hesitant to use the term best there, but Winston Wright's, I think he caught 67 balls last year for West Virginia, would have been a primary piece of the offense. Got his ankle injured in a car accident to no fault of his own when he went back home, visited Savannah, and probably won't play until maybe the Miami game would be my guess at this point. Nonetheless, you still brought in three other wide receivers in the transfer portal. Johnny Wilson has been very good to spectacular on one Friday night in Louisville that you were just referencing. Spain, the other kid, big, long, 6'4" kid, the guy that's making the change from being quarterback to wide receiver. There have been flashes where that kid looks like he might be a first-round pick. Now, his production hasn't been there this year, but they are still really optimistic long-term with what they have there. And then they went and got Micah Pittman from Oregon, who's just been a great kind of glue guy for them. Florida State has had kind of a rotation in which wide receivers have had their big stat day, Pokey Wilson against LSU, Johnny Wilson against Louisville. Micah has been more the five guys for 55 yards, but that's been a level of consistency that that unit did not have at all. So the wide receivers are light years better, and I've got to say that the linebackers are significantly better. Again, you went and got a significant piece in the transfer portal in Tatum Bethune out of UCF, and he has added a level of consistency and understanding of the linebacker position that you desperately needed. So between the transfer portal piece and the emergence of Kalen DeLoach and DJ Lundy, two kind of native domestic pieces on the roster, if you want to use that term, the linebackers is a place that Florida State's been searching for many years to get better, and they've made a pretty significant jump this year.
Talk Trey Benson a little bit, because he's kind of a hoss, and he's, among other things, he can return kickoffs, I guess.
Yeah, Ben, I legitimately think the last guy to return an opening kickoff for Florida State was by the name of Tomerick Vanover. If that gives you an idea.
Oh, that's royalty, man.
That is kickoff returning royalty. Absolutely. You're right about that. But no, Vincent's a big physical kid out of Mississippi originally that signed with Oregon. Had, in his own words, tore pretty much every possible thing you could tear in his knee, and has come back and is very impressive. Has, I think he's about 6'2", 218 or so, Chuck. He's a big physical guy, but has the feet of a running back that you think is, 5'9", 190. Has incredible change of direction. His burst is very impressive. And when you pair him with a former preferred walk-on in Trayshawn Ward, it's Florida State's, pretty fortunate in some of the level production that they've gotten at a running back. And then not as many touches and carries, but Toa Philly has gotten, if you're a fantasy guy or something like that, Toa Philly has gotten in the end zone a good amount, and the three of them have given Florida State quite the option when it comes to running the ball. But Benson's really impressive, leads the nation in broken tackles caused, and that is something that Wake Forest struggles with in general as a defense, and wouldn't shock me to see Benson feature pretty heavily on Saturday.
What up with Tate Rodemaker? Is there like a role that has developed? What do you expect from him?
I've been a Florida State fan since probably the year 1987, Chuck, and that was when I was 4 years old. And I don't know that I've ever been as negative or gotten to the point with any player, like I just don't want to see him on the field again, as I did with Tate Rodemaker. It had been 2 years ago, not in the game that they lost, but in the game that they flirted with losing against Jacksonville State. He was very, very bad. In every other time that you've seen him, whether it be game or even spring game, Tate has been very poor. He came into the game against Louisville through a poor interception. Granted, he might have been hit as he was throwing it, but still very poor. And then it was just like the light came on, Chuck. And sometimes in football, I didn't play D1 football to play at Florida State, so I try not to talk like I'm some high-level college athlete. But in the sport of football, sometimes you just got to get hit a couple times to get comfortable and to fall into some kind of rhythm. And I think Tate just needed to be out there. And at that point, there was no option. It was pure necessity with Jordan being injured, to the point to where he could get a little bit of confidence underneath him. And he had a spectacular performance against Louisville and got to play a little bit in mock-up time against BC, and I think the level of confidence that there is that Tate could come in and fill in if and when Jordan gets dinged up is at a level that I would have never been able to otherwise anticipate. So he's turned it around quite significantly.
Yeah, and there's no real we're going to put a change of pace in for Jordan Trapp. No, he is the change of pace. He doesn't need a change of pace. It's an additional talent. That's the only reason you're going to put another kid in, because Jordan Trapp's do whatever you want. I just thought that was interesting because you're right. And you weren't alone, by the way, in that opinion. It was you got to earn your scholarship at some point, and it looks like now he may. Ingram, appreciate it as always, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, Chuck.
Follow this man on Twitter, at Ingram Smith, simple enough. And so, yeah, that was just the general, because sometimes a kid's over-recruited or it's just a poor fit. Maybe you need to be the kid that transfers out to Purdy that transferred out to Nebraska, but he stayed, and there is something developing. Do you think most people understand, you know, Jordan Travis, he's a redshirt junior, right? Yeah. He's got another season after this. So, I don't know. I don't like to speculate because you're still talking about kids having to get into school and transfer and losing credits. They don't care anything about that in most cases. But I'll be cash with some other kids' education and collegiate career. But if the idea was, like, Joe Milton, I mean, I think we're all correct about this. Joe Milton's idea is, okay, I'll roll and I'll be the midweek quarterback and I'll back up Hendon Hooker. And that's fine because after this season, Hendon's gone. Like Jordan Travis, I'm pretty certain he has another season remaining. So I don't know really what the plan is. Plan was, I'm going to compete and take this job. No. So I appreciate Ingram coming on. Today's Truest reporter, Ingram Smith. And as I said, co-creator and host of the Nolcast, he and Bud and everybody do a great job, at Ingram Smith on Twitter. Get him there. And so the Florida State team rolls along. And as I said, this is going to be this is the kind of thing where the committee that I was talking about, the playoff committee, Florida State started 5-0 and beat Wake Forest. It's a positive.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com. And then call us for a free in-home consultation.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Are we all aware that the SEC weekend has already started? Like, do we, Dan, do you know South Carolina played last night?
They did, South Carolina State.
Gamecocks 50, Bulldogs 10. I will talk more about this, and I will say the biggest disclaimer in the world, the blocking hadn't been great, consistent ground game, blah, blah, blah. And some South Carolina receivers, some of those kids operate like they got frying pans hooked to their wrist. However, Spencer Rattler's got to be better. He does. We'll talk more about that. But they get a dub last night. Apparently, when I say are we aware of this, I think the total – there was one NFL team that requested credentials. Now, the game was moved. The Detroit Lions were the only one that made it to Columbia for the game. So I don't know if it was travel or we didn't have a scout available. I mean, you would think that the Panthers and like some teams could get there. But the word I got, there was one NFL team in the booth. That will not be the case tomorrow in Fayetteville. Alabama's on the road taking on Arkansas, and this is a game where Alabama will be threatened, absolutely. Now, Arkansas's defense ain't much, and the further away from the line of scrimmage you get, the dicier it gets, and Alabama is learning. Some of those kids holding and warning, they're learning, Brooks, to really exploit you on the back end. But you're going on the road in the conference and playing a really explosive team, and so that ain't easy. Want to welcome on now one of my best friends in the industry and certainly a friend of the program, 97.7 The Zone in Huntsville is where you can hear him every Monday through Friday morning. It is Drew DeArmond. Brother, how are you today?
Good, Chuck. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. I appreciate you making some time today. Let's talk about Hogs and Tide tomorrow, and let's start just with the most general thing. Who's healthy? Who may not be as far as availability for the Tide tomorrow?
Going to be interesting. You know, the two big injuries coming out of the Vanderbilt game were Byron Young, who's probably Alabama's most consistent defensive lineman. He had an ankle injury. I was hearing it, as far as midweek goes, he was practicing. So we'll see if he's on a pitch count as far as, you know, snaps go. And then, you know, near the end of the game, I think everybody saw it. It kind of reminded me of Minkah Fitzpatrick against LSU a few years ago in Bryant-Denny Stadium. And he ended up playing the rest of that game just on third downs before recovering. But Jordan Battle, Alabama's veteran safety, kind of tweaked a hammy. Heard he's been practicing as well. If he is on a pitch count, I think you'll see Malachi Moore play a bigger role and go and slide over from his, you know, dime role to playing in the base defense. He's got a lot of experience. But certainly those two injuries are big questions defensively, Chuck. And then are we finally going to see JoJo Earl, Tyler Harrell, or Aaron Anderson? All have been practicing. You know, a couple of those guys have warmed up in the last, you know, in the last game or so, but we haven't seen them on the field in a meaningful rep. Is Nick Saban, does he have enough trust in them to put them in the middle of a hornet's nest in Fayetteville where there's going to be a sellout crowd and it's going to be a raucous environment?
All right, well, let's talk about a couple of kids a little bit outside the starting 11, but they have roles. And tell me what they may be. Jalen Milroe, he's gotten some run, and that's a kid that you've talked about since he signed a scholarship. He's a redshirt freshman, but he's played. And then Jace McClellan with him, it hadn't been talent or anything else. It hadn't even been the depth chart. It's been an injury. Talk about, like, the teacup you've seen of Jalen Milroe and then what Jace McClellan, what his role is.
Well, I mean, Milroe has, in his appearances this year, has shown the explosive running ability. I mean, he ran the ball for, you know, I believe a 28-yard explosive run last week against Vandy on a 3rd-and-20 and converted and set up a touchdown for Alabama from, you know, Jamarian Miller. So he certainly has, you know, showcased some explosive ability. They haven't really created a package for him in a big game yet. It'll be interesting if that's, you know, a wrinkle that they have, you know, kind of been holding back, a card that they have yet to play. And then Jace McClellan, quite frankly, I think he's Alabama's best all-around running back because he can run with thump. You saw him run through contact for a 12-yard touchdown in Bryce Young's last possession last week, late in the third quarter, to stake Alabama to a 41-3 lead against Vanderbilt and Bryant-Denny Stadium. He can also catch the ball very well out of the backfield. He has a well-rounded skill set. He's not quite as dynamic as far as elusiveness and speed with a guy like Jahmyr Gibbs. But Jahmyr, I think at times, has shied from contact and hasn't really run the ball up inside hard. So I think they complement each other. I think Jace is going to be crucial to the success of this game because Alabama is going to have to be able to run the football against Arkansas. You know, they're going to have to be balanced. As you mentioned, Chuck, the Arkansas secondary is struggling. No Jalen Catalon, maybe the best safety in the SEC. They also have, you know, some other injuries.
Slusher's out.
Yep, exactly. So they're giving up 302 yards passing per game. So you wonder if Alabama is going to come out with some tempo and throw the ball around like they did against Vanderbilt because Vanderbilt was vulnerable on the back end. I do think the running game may play a little bit bigger of a you know, a role in this game than it did against Vanderbilt. And also what Alabama's got to do with running the football is slow down that Arkansas pass rush because that's one thing they have done well is disrupt, and they've been able to rush the passer. And I think, you know, I said it in Atlanta, and I probably said it on your show in July at the College Football Hall of Fame. I said that I thought Drew Sanders would be one of the top five newcomers as far as in the SEC.
Oh, yeah.
He certainly has been. I don't think anybody anticipated going into this first week of October that he would have one more sack than Will Anderson as the Arkansas Razorbacks and Alabama get ready to hook up on CBS on Saturday.
Drew, I want to ask you about the receivers because, like, if we go back a couple of seasons, I want to say, wasn't it after the Waddle injury that Devonta Smith became, like, all caps, Devonta Smith? Is there a chance that we're seeing Ja'Cory Brooks become Ja'Cory Brooks, like the best Ja'Cory Brooks that's possible? What do you think that looks like?
Well, I think it's possible, and I really like his game, Chuck. I mean, I think he's a clutch guy. You remember what he did in the Iron Bowl last year. You know, once Jameson Williams was ejected for targeting, he had the huge catch to tie the game late in the fourth quarter and then help Alabama win it in overtime. And then against Texas, people may kind of forget this, but on the touchdown drive to take the lead in the fourth quarter about midway point, Alabama did went for it on fourth down and three. He came up with a big catch over the middle. He makes low blood pressure plays, clutch plays like a Kevin Norwood, which is kind of who he reminds me of. He and Bryce have really nice chemistry. Now, it was good to see Jermaine Burton get into the mix more in the last game. Had a 48-yard catch and also had four catches for 94 yards. So we'll see, you know, if his production starts amping up. But I do think Ja'Cory Brooks has a lot of, you know, chemistry with Bryce. I think he could be developing into that number one guy. And so it's going to be interesting. I think really the offense still revolves around this five-man running back room, but you have to have the receiver step up and make plays. We've seen Cameron Latude make a big catch, too, against Louisiana Monroe when he came back from injury of a 38-yard. So he's made some plays as well. But I do think when you saw him catch four straight passes on that touchdown drive against Vandy that Ja'Cory Brooks may be asserting himself. And Alabama needs that because you always kind of have a hierarchy. There's always a number one receiver. And Ja'Cory Brooks, you know, I thought going into this season, it might very well be him or Jermaine Burton. And it looks like Ja'Cory is starting to step forward in that role.
What up with Eli Ricks?
Yeah, great question. I mean, he didn't get a lot of reps in the last game. He got a pass interference penalty on a back shoulder throw. He's had some trouble physically. When he enrolled at Alabama, he was coming off injury against LSU. As you know, he missed much of last season. It also set him back physically. He needed to get bigger. And on top of it, the defensive scheme at Alabama is, you know, an NFL scheme. It's very complicated. He basically played man defense at LSU.
Yep.
He did not have to play in zone. So he's having to learn to be disciplined in that regard. And I'll be honest, probably the biggest surprise coming out of you know, spring practice and fall camp, and the most improved player on the team defensively has been Terrion Arnold.
I knew you were going to say it, man. I love that kid. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. He converted from safety to corner. He's been tested. I mean, Vanderbilt went after him early. He's certainly given up a play or two, but he's also competed really hard. He's played physically. He's tackled well. He held up against the back shoulder throws, and it's going to be interesting because last year Treylon Burks gave Alabama everything they could handle, and so did K.J. Jefferson. Treylon was one of the best receivers Alabama faced. Now it's more of a committee approach. Jaden Hazelwood's a big part of things, but you know, it's going to be interesting to see how much Arkansas, you know, tests that Alabama secondary, which, you know, right now is the best pass defense in the SEC, but, you know, they haven't faced a guy like K.J. Jefferson, who's also a dual threat, who's a load against the run. So going to be interested to see how Terrion Arnold steps up and plays. And so far he's passed all the tests, he and Kool-Aid McKinstry. But they will play Kyree Jackson, I'm sure some, and Eli Ricks. But right now, quite simply, Terrion Arnold and Kool-Aid McKinstry have been up to the challenge. You've got a veteran safety room, and that's kind of been your starting unit. It's all about opportunity. If somebody struggles on Saturday in Fayetteville, maybe it gives Ricks an opening to – get a chance to play, or Kyree Jackson. But so far, Terrion Arnold and Kool-Aid McKinstry have done their jobs and haven't given those guys much opportunity. I know Kyree has played probably more than Rick, but, you know, he struggled a little bit, got benched, and we saw Terrion Arnold assert himself. And so far, he won't let go of the job. He's really been a revelation for Alabama back there at corner.
There's a funny moment, you know, talking about the depth and what that program is. While I was watching the other day, my wife was there as well, and Quandarius Robinson was on the screen. Now, he's covering kicks or something. And, I mean, you know what that kid looks like. Looks like he's a bodyguard for a fighter or something. I mean, he's like 6'5", 230, just built, ripped up dude. and he was on the screen for some reason. My wife's like, "Who's that?" And I looked at her, and I was like, "Just another kid." I mean, and that's what Quandarius Robinson is on that roster. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, he got an award for his special teams play last week against Vanderbilt. He's really done a good job there, but he's made a lot of strides physically. He had a little bit of an off-field issue last year that kind of derailed him a little bit, but he's bounced back from that. He's just behind some freakazoid stud guys.
Dallas Turner's the wrong guy to play the same position as.
Right. That's why our guy Drew Sanders is at Arkansas because of Dallas Turner. So Dallas has got kind of a stranglehold on that Sam spot. His stat line has been kind of pedestrian so far. It'll be interesting to see if he has a breakout against Arkansas. But Q-Rob is definitely the backup right now at the Sam spot. They've got a lot of just really good depth at outside backer right now at Alabama. There's really not a lot of drop-off, and even at inside backer, because if you've noticed, Chuck, I mean, I think Henry Toa, who was honored as a player of the week by Alabama, has played like an All-American since the middle of last year. He's playing very well right now, and beside him, Jalen Moody, I thought, was their best player against Texas, and it's his first year starting full-time. He's played very well, but they've been rotating him with Deontay Lawson, and that redshirt freshman from Mobile Christian has, I think, played just as well as Moody. There's been no drop-off, and so when you look at this Alabama linebacker core and all the depth that they have, I mean, it's pretty amazing what they're able to do. Chris Braswell has started to play more, and they finally did show you a little bit of that three-man pass rush group with those guys quite a bit against Vandy. I'm going to be really fascinated to see how they do it against Arkansas because, again, they have to contain KJ Jefferson, who's got mobility but is a load to bring down. And so on third downs, it's going to be interesting if we see a lot of Braswell, certainly Will Anderson and Dallas Turner together against Arkansas like we did a little bit against Vanderbilt.
Drew, always appreciate the commentary, man. We will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Chuck.
Drew DeArmond, and again from ESPN Huntsville, just does a great job up there. Do you remember linebacker at Alabama, Adrian Hubbard? Again, he looked like a boxer's bodyguard. Just another guy. But this kid walks, Quandarius Robinson walks across the screen. He's like, "Who's that?" I was like, "He covers kicks. That's what he does. He covers kicks. He runs real fast in a straight line, tries to stay in his lane. What else does he do?" I was like, "That's kind of what he does at Alabama." Now, he may transfer because he would like to do more, and he'll go to Oklahoma State. But I don't know that. Maybe he'll stay. Maybe he'll be Drew Sanders. You know what Drew Sanders would be doing right now if he was in Tuscaloosa? He would have had some spot duty when Dallas Turner had like a bracket pop off on his chin strap. "Oh, equipment! Drew, run out there while we get him." Or this is the ultimate indignity. You ever looked at another player? "Hey, give him your helmet, because we don't want to lose him for a play, so give him your helmet." I got a game to win. You do what you do. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll wrap up on a Friday.
Catch the King of College Football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Our fundamentals that were pretty strong in the first three games of pass protection were not there against Oregon State, and it's been made very clear to those position groups that we expect a lot more, and I would expect that we'll take a big step forward this week.
USC head coach Lincoln Riley, and he is commenting on the USC. Dan, did you see the USC Oregon State, the story about the line last week, the wagering line?
Oh, yeah, that all the money was on Oregon State. Like an overwhelming amount.
Yeah, USC, that's Lincoln Riley. And he is talking to the media ahead of this weekend's game. Oh, I'll fill in a blank in just a second. But ahead of this weekend's game for Troy, and he is saying that we will be better than we were last Saturday. If you don't know the story, USC comes out like a house of fire. beats Rice, takes care of Stanford on the road, on the farm, beats a good Fresno State team, and, I mean, they handled them. And they started to look like, hey, wait a minute, we got some big-time Hollywood talent, and it's performing that way. Well, the line last Sunday, like 12 days ago, they played Oregon State on the road in Corvallis last week. And after starting 3-0 and beating a pretty good Fresno team, handily, Caesar's Sportsbook comes out with the line like, I don't know, like 11 or something, or 10. Everybody else comes out about 6 hours later with it 5.5. Oregon State, they played them tough, and there was a late score, as a matter of fact. Final score, USC 17, Oregon State 14. But that was on the road against a really well-coached and talented. I mean, Oregon State's better, what's the phrase, be a beaver. There are a lot of kids making that choice now. All right, so let's get back to Lincoln Riley's comments, because that was last Saturday. And he says, we will be better. Well, you need to be better. But he says, I am confident it'll happen this weekend. Okay, now let me fill in that detail, I said. Yeah, I'm confident too. You're playing Arizona State. Arizona State, what are they? They're on the road, got about two-thirds of a roster, no coach. The end is coming for that program, scholarship-wise. I mean, there's a lot of negativity, and they're not nearly as talented. So, yes, I assume that you will have a little more success on the line of scrimmage tomorrow night. Pac-12 after dark, 10:30 Eastern kickoff, 9:30 Central, and, of course, Mountain West after midnight. You got all kinds of choices with that as well. Dan, how are you?
The thing I think about the most whenever I think of Oregon State is their third down noise that they play over the loudspeakers there at their stadium. It's a chainsaw. That, I mean, you just hear, instead of, you know, it's money down or it's third down, you just hear, and you're like, what the hell is that? And it's like, oh, that's a chainsaw. So Beavers chainsaw. I get it. Okay. A couple of weeks ago, I was talking the Mississippi State game for LSU with somebody, and I just said, what does that do for Brian Kelly? He looked at me and said, that's a buy-in win. That's what that is. That's the team saying, coach, we trust you. We believe in you. A couple of weeks ago was not us. Show us the way. We can make it happen if you show us the way. And he did. And in that second half, they absolutely dominated Mississippi State and picked up the win. I think there is a constant with Brian Kelly teams that I don't think he gets enough credit for. One, it was because of the place he was at, because it's so easy to crap on Notre Dame. It's such a safe space. Everybody's going to say, oh, they're overrated. They haven't been relevant in years, all these different types of things. Well, they still made a couple of college football playoffs, and that was because of Brian Kelly. The other thing that we notice about his teams is that they don't regress as the season goes along. They usually improve as the season goes along. Remember when the Wolves were at the gate back in 2017 after a 4-8 season, and he threw out both of his coordinators. He changed his coaching style. He did all those different types of things. He brought in Mike Elko, and he brought in Chip Long at the time. And both coaches have since moved on. But my point is that could have been a spiraling out of control moment when they lost by a point to Georgia. And I remember that he was asked after the game, is this going to snowball? He said, it's not going to snowball. And I think that they finished the season with 10 wins, if I'm not mistaken. So they improved as the season went along. I think we're looking at the same thing with LSU right now, because that second half against Mississippi State, I think to a man, even without Garrett Dellinger this week with a hand injury, I think that the offensive line looked at each other and said, we can open up some holes for guys to be able to run through. And the running backs, even without Armani Goodwin, said, hey, we can run the football. We can do this. We can make this thing happen. The funny thing is the only, I guess, real question mark I have right now is, when I need you to make routine passes, can you make routine passes? I don't know if Jaden Daniels can do that. How weird is it that this guy, it seems like when it's, you know, set up on a tee for him, all you got to do is just hit the ball, that it seems like he airmails someone or he underthrows them, but then he's on the run, he's pressured any of these things, and maybe he dumps it off to somebody, and he drops an absolute dime and over-the-shoulder throw or something like that. You're just like, what? Like, what am I missing here? Like, how is this not computing? My point is, I said after that Florida State game, LSU's going to get somebody this year, and people were like, yeah, not if they look like that. Of course not if they look like that. But going forward, I think this is going to be a team that just continues to gain confidence. It's a bad spot for Auburn to be in, especially the fact that they can't score points right now.
And I think that that's a chance also for LSU to really be able to entrench themselves in the Brian Kelly era and say, yeah, we're on the right path.
Don't think, just blurt. Give me a 1 through 10. How threatened do you feel LSU is tomorrow at Auburn versus Tigers?
Zero.
Okay.
I think that 9 line is as safe as any in the country.
But that's a great answer, because there are some LSU fans that have so much uncertainty about their own team, and that's built in, that they're worried about tomorrow. Folks, the next 5 opponents after Auburn are all way more difficult than Auburn. So, yeah, if you feel threatened tomorrow, it's tough times ahead. Wraps it up. See y'all Monday.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at atlantaramjack.com.